and I'm the co-founder of Generosity Group. My business partner is Heron Nickel, and the two of us just kind of geek out about capital campaigns and feasibility studies and helping churches connect their mission with their building project and how doing a campaign can actually help a church in its ministry and growth. And we really enjoy talking about stuff like that, and I'm not going to talk about any of that today. Instead, we're going to talk a little bit more about generosity and kind of the neuroscience behind generosity, how our brains are hardwired to give, how being generous, practicing generosity makes us happier people, and then how we can kind of create a culture of generosity within our churches. So those are kind of the three, that's where I'm going today. And I'll start out by saying that I found myself surprised by generosity when our family moved to Chicago from the suburbs in 2009. We just found ourselves in this community that just had a DNA of being generous. And it was not our church. It was my daughter's school. We were just welcomed in immediately. It was sort of understood that parents carpooled together, that if one child was going to a game, you took as many kids as could fit in your car, and you would drive them to the next game, and you'd have snacks for the car, not just your own child. There were service projects throughout the school and after school that all the kids did. Parents were generous with volunteering in the classrooms, and yes, parents were generous financially as well. And so my husband and I kind of found ourselves wrapped up in this culture and became, it was wonderful. And yes, we found ourselves giving financially to the school as well. So I don't believe that generosity is an exclusive gift from God that God gives to some people but not to others. I believe it's hardwired in our DNA. And here's why. Our God is a generous God. Our God is a creator God. God gives us things to us all the time. God gave us the gift of life as well as the promise of salvation. We're created in God's image, and so it stands to reason that we would be generous as well. There's also scientific research to back up my theory that shows that not only are our brains hardwired to give, but that practicing generosity actually leads to happier lives. Giving is good for you, and it brings meaning to life, and there are emotional, physical, and even financial benefits to you. So today we're going to take a look at some of that. So we've all heard that it's better to give than receive. And I think we can all think of a time when giving made us feel good, when we experienced that joy of giving. I still get excited when I think about last Christmas. I was shopping at the Andersonville Galleria, which is a wonderful store filled with local artists and all their stuff, and I was browsing for something for my husband, when something caught my eye in the corner. It was a travel poster, and it said, "Visit Dagobah, you will." And then there was another one that said, "Hoth, tour by Tauntaun, escape the confines of humanity." And there was another one, "Behold the infinite trees of Endor." Are there any Star Wars fans here? My son is a huge Star Wars fan, so when I saw these posters, I was thrilled. And I could feel my pulse start to race a little bit, and my stomach got that kind of tight, like, ooh, joyous feeling. And then I searched through more posters and came across a series of Harry Potter posters, which would be perfect for my daughter. So every time now I go in their rooms and see the posters, I kind of get like, ooh, that was good. That was a good gift. The joy of giving. So is there hard data to back up that concept of is it better to give than to receive? Well, I'm happy to say yes. There's a growing body of scientific literature pointing to the link between happiness and giving. Jenny Santis wrote a book called The Giving Way to Happiness, and in it she describes two studies they did in the mid-2000s that examined where in the brain the impulse to give originates. So both studies asked people to make donations to charities, and then they looked at the brain activity through functional magnetic resonance imaging to see where the blood flow would result from the activity of the neurons. And then they also tied these experiments to the subject's everyday behaviors by asking them about their involvement in charitable work or about their general capacity for altruism. And the studies demonstrated that when the volunteers placed the interests of others before their own, The generosity activated the primitive part of the brain that usually lights up in response to sex. So donating affects two brain reward systems working together. The midbrain BTA striatum mesolimbic network, you heard mesolimbic this morning, which is also stimulated by food, sex, drugs, and money. So it's kind of the rock and roll area of your brain. And it also stimulates the subgenal area, which becomes stimulated when humans see babies and romantic partners. So kind of the heart area. So giving is getting both of those parts of the brain. And this, what was so exciting about this study was that it kind of backed up, gave biological foundation to the concept, the economic concept of warm glow giving. So in 1989, economist James Andrioni was trying to explain why people give to charity. Because his question was, you know, if our brains have evolved to maximize our own survival, why are we motivated to help others when we incur personal costs from that? And so he came up with the concept of warm glow giving, which means that the giver is going to receive some usefulness from the act of giving. So then the study in the mid-2000s supports the existence of warm glow giving at a biological level and gave evidence that the joy of giving has a biological basis in the brain. So altruism isn't just a superior moral faculty that suppresses, you know, our basic selfish urges, you know, that we can turn on and off. It's hardwired into our brain. So it's similar to a runner's high. A person can experience a helper's high. Alan Lukes is a volunteerism and wellness expert, and he looked at the physical effects of giving surveying more than 1,700 women who volunteered regularly. And his study demonstrated that 15% of them reported feeling a high when they helped others, while 43% felt stronger and more energetic, and 13% experienced fewer aches and pains. Why? Well, his research showed that when we give, when we imagine giving even, or when we watch someone give, our mesolimbic system releases chemicals that dominate our other stress hormones. So chemicals like soothing hormone dopamine and the antidepressant hormone serotonin. So giving can make you feel good, biologically. So does it make it happier? Well, another study by Christian Smith, who's a professor of sociology at Notre Dame, essentially spent 5 years collecting empirical data from over 2,000 Americans and found that the wealth of evidence reveals a consistent link between demonstrating generosity and leading a better life. So more generous people are happier, and have a greater sense of purpose, experience less depression. And he calls this the paradox of generosity. So again, rather than generosity producing net losses because you're giving something away, in general, the more you give of yourselves, the more you get back, goods in return. And often, sometimes you're getting back the things you gave, so money, time, attention. But more importantly, generous people tend to receive back goods that are even more valuable than those they gave. More intangible goods like happiness, health, a sense of purpose in life, personal growth. I think most of us have probably experienced this. When you go on a mission trip, what do you hear when you come back? Or what do you say when you come back most often? I got so much more out of it than I gave. Yeah. Right? So, here's the key though. Smith's study also revealed that to achieve a better life, a person must practice generosity regularly. Which means that random acts of kindness are not enough. Practices of generosity, like regular financial giving, volunteering, relational, neighborly generosity, those are the things that have the capacity to just shape people and processes of human formation over time. But by contrast, the one-time giving things or infrequent acts of generosity seem not to be associated with greater well-being. And these include being an organ donor, estate giving through wills, which is very important, but it's not a regular ongoing practice for most people. Lending possessions and donating blood infrequently. So you have to be practicing generosity to achieve these great benefits from it. So what does that mean then for the church? Well, it means we need to start thinking about how we can cultivate generosity in our church, and our congregation will be happier and healthier. And when it's time for raise money, it will be easier for people to think generously. So how do you cultivate generosity within your church? There will be three things to think about. Preach and teach, testify, and practice. So preach and teach. So what the Bible says about the spiritual benefits of generosity should be boldly taught from the pulpit, in your classes, through sermons, through Bible study, not as an abstract notion, and not just about financial generosity, about everyday life of generosity. When you celebrate communion, do you talk about it being a generous gift from God? It is. You should celebrate that and name it as being generous. Have you ever received anything tangible during a worship service? Here, things I've received are stones, regular buttons, like for clothing, pins for my lapel, and peppermints. So for instance, the peppermints, it was to illustrate a sermon that talked about a chaplain who, the topic was maybe on grief, but the chaplain was explaining that sometimes when she meets with people who are experiencing grief at such a profound level, she has nothing to say to them that will make them feel better. Sometimes the only thing she can do is sit there and offer them a peppermint. And so we all were offered peppermints, and it was profound. I mean, it was amazing to get this little starlight, red and white star mint, just very, very powerful. And so, that was an act of generosity, giving us something. I mean, it's the same concept with trade shows or at the state fair, when you're given all kinds of little tchotchkes. Those are all, it's all good things, all generous things. Testify, I think we've talked about testimony this morning. We heard two wonderfully powerful testimonies. And whenever we do a capital campaign, we encourage people to testify about why they're giving money to the church and why they love their church so much. And practice. I think as Methodists, we practice mission really pretty well. I think we could do a better job at naming it as being generous, naming things as being generous. So when people are making meals for new parents or those suffering an illness or loss, and you name that as a generous act. When we're making sandwiches for pads, we should be talking about, well, this is generous to a you're performing acts of generosity and love right here. Thanking your leadership team, thanking your Sunday school teachers as they walk out of service, not just the beginning of the year, but thanking them for taking time this morning and offering their time. That was very generous of you this morning for teaching. Hospitality, sort of an unspoken generosity that we should name as being generous. I coordinate the hospitality at our church, and there was a young man named Seth who was going to provide it, and he called and said, what do I need to do? And I said, oh, Seth, just, whatever's easiest for you, pick up some cookies or crackers and, juice, and we'll be good. Seth spent the evening baking and baked this beautiful spread of cupcakes and cookies, and everything was home-baked and decorated beautifully, and there were cut-up fruit, and, he went above and beyond. And as we were leaving at service to go out to the hospitality, the pastor said, oh, everyone, Seth has provided a beautiful spread. Please, join us and thank him. I could see Seth just kind of, it made him feel great. It was recognized as being an act of generosity. And I bet it's going to be that much easier to have Seth sign up again next time. it was really, there are all kinds of different ways of cultivating generosity. It's really naming it and talking about it. In conclusion, we are fearfully and wonderfully made in the image of our most generous God. And God's created us to be generous beings. We hardwired it into our brain. Biologically, he made us generous, and we're going to be happier in life when we're generous. God is good to us. So to have a healthy church congregation, we need to go out there and cultivate that generosity as well.